Welcome to episode 39 of the Virtual Velo Podcast. I'm again joined by co-host Christopher Schwenker. Chris, I'm sat here back in my own studio in the UK. We've had our time together and now it's time to get back to reality.
You know what? Our time together was fun, but I must admit we had more technical errors when we were sitting like right next to each other. It was so embarrassing with Brian Duffy trying to, like, we looked like, you know, we are amateurs, but we looked like even worse amateurs in front of him. It was something else.
It was, I mean, like I say, we're so used to doing this, you know, like 5,000 miles away, whatever the distance is. Yeah, we were sat face to face. We had additional support with Connor there to your son. And you know, people were ringing the phone. It was a crazy time. But we got there at the end. And I have to say, you know, he was a great guest, but he was also very patient with us. And I think we recorded some of those outtakes. So I think at some point we've got to play those outtakes for the community, right?
That was so hilarious. His alarm goes off. Room service calls the room. The room service is knocking at the door. And all you hear me saying is, oh, I'm so embarrassed, Brian. I'm so sorry. But anyway, we've moved on from that. I think that hopefully this will go smoothly.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, there's so much going on right now, and it's a packed show today, I guess. We've got some guests coming on. We've got Freddie Ovett. We haven't got Freddie Ovett. Let me do that again, Chris. You're going to edit that out. Or do you want to just roll with that? I mean, Freddie Ovett is something we're going to talk about because, of course, we've got the Zwift Games, and Freddie Ovett and Catherine Fourie were the two winners, respectively, of the men's and ladies events in the Zwift Games. So I guess that led us quite nicely into that.
I think so, too. And I think that that worked out really well for Zwift also, not only for us, but for Zwift. You know, I think that Freddie is an ambassador, right? He seems to be promoting Zwift pretty hard. That worked out really well. And he also rode up the Alp pretty hard, too, made it difficult for everybody else and put himself, you know, basically from nowhere into the overall championship and did had a decent payday from both ends, it seemed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you know, I admittedly didn't watch the whole of the Zwift Games. I enjoyed watching. I caught up more of the females and the ladies racing than I did the gents. But yeah, I did, because I was flying back actually when it was the hill climb finish with the men. But I could hear a little bit about what's going on. But you know, for me, the ladies racing was so exciting as well. And I remember just watching that final climb and KK stopped there. You know, which was for a teammate, I guess.
Yeah, you know, when it first happened, like, I watched all of it, of course. You know, that's just what I do. I'm totally into this stuff. So I watched it all, and when KK dropped off, all of the comments, including the commentary, was that she had a dropout. There's something wrong. I spoke to her after the race, and the pure emotion, like, she was basically crying with joy with the fact that once she fell out of contention, she just couldn't hold the pace of the front. Right, the front was just ballistic, and when she fell off the podium, the plan was all along for her to pace Catherine to the overall championship. And she said to me that it was a greater victory for her to be able to contribute in that way than if she had won it herself. And, you know, it's like, say what you want about KK, and I've gotten to know her pretty well, you know, since we met each other in the city, and, you know, she lives pretty close to us here. She is the real deal. Genuinely, what you see is what you get from her. She is totally all in with this, and she just loves to ride her bike and ride her bike hard. And, you know, the fact that she runs away with the ride on jersey, you know, makes it, you know, just like she is the star of our sport, and what you get is what you get from her.
Yeah, you know, I say, we've had the pleasure of having on to the show, and for me, you know, meeting at that point and just getting the genuine excitement that, you know, that you get from KK. You see on a social media, but you never quite know whether that, you know, the reality of the person can live up to what you see on the social media from. But, you know, the few times that we spoke and we had her on the show, then it absolutely does. And it's not a surprise to me that she ran away. That I also, you know, for me, it was really quite clear what she was doing. You know, we know who's in the ear as well, Josh, who is phenomenal when it comes to tactical insights and so on. You know, let's be honest, Illy Gardner was up the road. You know, she's a great climber anyway. Also, UK athlete, we see her on the hill climb scene over here. Very light athlete as well. She rode away with it. And for me, it was really clear what was happening there. And, you know, and they just made the right decision at the right time to make sure Catherine got the result. So absolutely fantastic team play there. I'm sure we're going to talk about the Zwift Games with our two guests, because obviously I know I made that faux pas right at the start there. But our two guests, of course, are Lionel Vuillasan and Ollie Jones. They're going to be joining us from Coalition or Coalition Alpha. So it's going to be great to talk to those guys. But the other thing we've got to talk about is the article that you did recently as well. And I guess there's two things. There's the annulment article that we've got to talk about. You and I can talk about that now as well, because that seemed to get a lot of engagement, Chris, from the community as well, you know, in terms of the analytics. Why do you think that article resonated so much with the community or got so much engagement?
You know, it's funny. The article, you know, I get to see the numbers, right, for the people that visit and engage with my website. One of the most engaged with articles that I've written this year. And, you know, I think it's a number of things, right? First of all, you see these two athletes, you know, Lionel and Ollie. They're like the goats of esports, right? They've been there. They've been to big events. They've performed well. But not only that, you know, Lionel has been extremely transparent with his numbers. Ollie is a real-world pro. You know, why is anybody questioning what they're doing, first of all, right? I think some people wanted to see the numbers and see, you know, what they actually did. But then again, there's also, you know, an air of mystery around MyWoosh, right? It's the different thing. It's the they've come in and bought, you know, the world championships, you know, all of these things.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, I don't see it that way.
What do you mean in terms of buying the world championships, or you don't see it in terms of, you know, a bit cloak and daggerish? What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is that people were accusing of myself and the MyWoosh people of orchestrating this as a PR stunt. Couldn't have been further from the truth.
All right, so let me ask you that question then, Chris. I'm going to ask you the very direct, because I saw some of those comments. Were you paid to run that article then?
Absolutely not. Quite the contrary. I've never been paid to run anything by MyWoosh or anybody else to that matter. You know, it's just not something that I do to this point. I'm not saying that I never would under the right circumstances, but I have not ever engaged in a paid media campaign. But on the flip side, I saw this happening and I knew about it. When I was in Abu Dhabi, I discussed it with Matt, you know, off the record. I'm like, you know, what's going on here? Because the whole annulment thing went on while I was there. And he's like, Chris, we're going to bring them in. You know, they're putting out numbers that we don't have a baseline for. Even the pros aren't doing what they're doing. We need to kind of just set the stage here for what we're going to be doing moving forward. So as soon as I heard that, I'm like, you know, the impact that this could have on the sport, moving forward with the sport, you know, of course, our mission is to do that, is really profound. You know, if these guys are going to be putting up these numbers, and I basically badgered him until he finally said, all right, Chris, you know, I think that, you know, we're going to do this. We'll let you in on this. But it took a lot. And it also speaks to the change in culture there. Like they are very open. They know that access to media is going to create trust and build relationships with them. And it's really refreshing because we don't have those sort of relationships with all the platforms that we deal with.
No, you know what? It's for me, I mean, I really enjoy the article. A, I'm just interested in numbers. And, you know, when we spoke to Matt Smithson, you know, he said that, you know, I think he said something like, and I'm going to paraphrase because I can't remember his exact words, but basically, you know, this is a new sport. You know, we're on a fixed turbo, fixed bike, whatever it might be. The numbers, who knows what the numbers are going to be like compared to athlete, you know, the IRL athletes, the road cyclists, if you like, or the cyclocross riders and so on. Things just don't happen in the same way. And obviously, compared to road cyclists, because let's be honest, I've sat in rooms, I've sat in coffee shops on the Sunday ride, and riders said to me, how are these guys doing numbers which match, you know, Pogacar or Matthew van der Poel, whoever it might be from that point of view. But we're obviously, the races are very different. They're a lot shorter. You know, and obviously there's this repeated short efforts that happen. And what was really interesting for me is some of those numbers in terms of those shorter efforts were really close to what some of the pros have done, the top pros in those heat-of-the-moment circumstances. You know, but some of these riders who are doing this at the top level of cycling esports, that's not mean to say they could do this after 4 or 5 hours like these pros are doing out in the real world. But the other thing that I want to mention here, you know, from my point of view, Chris, see what you think is, I really like the fact that both the athletes and the platform have been really transparent about it, because just coming back to the Zwift Games there was a couple of situations in the Zwift Games when I thought the community was, you know, the elite community would implode on itself. And I think there's a real danger of doing that because it's almost like self-policing at the moment. You know, Ryder has a heart rate dropout. Ryder has a little bit of a freak moment in terms of the power numbers, whatever it might be. And all of a sudden, the elite community jump on each other and jump on the other teams. And it's really concerning to me because I think if that continues to happen, you know, that could be really damaging for the sport. And I think having this one clear organization who make these clear decisions on the validation, the accuracy, the rules in terms of what you can and can't do, and it's not a moving goalpost. You know, and I'm not referring specifically to the Kaminsky issue where on the Epic he had someone logged into his account and he logged him out, because I think Zwift acknowledged that that could happen, you know, for whatever reason. But there was other situations there where riders were jumping on each other. You know, and it just seems to me this season that we're coming to an end now, there's been a lot of that amongst the teams. You know, and I'm lucky enough to speak to some of those teams and get to hear from the teams. Sometimes I'm in the Discords and the private chats. And, you know, for me, I think we need more transparency like this from the riders and from the people running the events and running the platform across the whole, entrance, if you like.
Well, I agree with you, and it all comes down to communication, as far as I'm concerned. And they're letting me in and giving me this information. You know, in order for me to write that article, I conducted like an hour and a half interview with Matt. So, you know, having that ability to get the inside scoop from them and then communicate it to the community, it dissuades a lot of rumors. It calms things down when you have the information, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. Right, I'm just reporting what I'm told, that the facts as I see them. You know, there was none of that going on. There was that's what breeds the contempt, is when you have a lack of communication. And the past is, you know, you've had a culture of cheating and there without very much repercussions from, you know, the platforms or you know the entities that are governing things. What is the community supposed to do? Just like you, right, that we should all be. We're all on the same team and we should be lifting each other up, but that's not always the way that the elite athletes treat each other.
No. I don't want to dwell on that too long and be too negative about, you know, that, because I thought the Zwift Games was great. Thought it was really engaging from what I saw of it. I did watch that last race of the men's sprint in Glasgow, and that seemed really exciting, and watching Kaminsky go like that was also phenomenal to see. So yeah, certainly, you know, a great games, a great spectacle from my point of view.
There were a lot of very innovative things that were introduced, you know, with all the data and there were more things going on in the broadcast that made it engaging, at least for me. You know, it's different. What's going on at My Wish is different. And the other thing that everybody, we can't just ignore this, they're throwing a lot of money around, right? And Matt is, you know, he's not apologetic about it. He says, you know, we are giving out a lot of money. We are giving a lot of prize money, and we have the prerogative to do this testing to make sure that we're giving it to the right people. In addition to the fact that they're using that to, support and to kind of progress what's going on in the esports space also. So we're really in uncharted waters in a number of different ways here.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I've been open in the community. I am actively racing the Sunday Race Club on a Sunday, you know, and I've been doing it now since October, maybe September, you know, and I have won prize money on one occasion. I've pretty much suffered off the back and out the back of the groups on many occasions there, and I've got no expectation of taking any prize money for me. But you know what, Chris, that's not the reason I'm doing it. I'm doing it because it's a really fun new challenge. You know, the dynamics are very different. There is a little bit of a delay still on the power, but you know, it's really enjoyable relearning in a way how to race on that platform, and the racing's very different. There's no way that you can sit in a My Wish, My Sunday Race Club race, if you like, and then wait for the sprint. It doesn't happen. You know, I've repeatedly, I said this to a coach friend of mine earlier this week, I repeatedly, week after week, have been hitting the best 20-minute power. I've raced some A races this year in ZRL. In fact, all my races have been A races in ZRL. I haven't hit my 20-minute power once. My best 20-minute power. I've done it week in, week out. It's a completely different challenge. And it's actually, I feel like it's more akin to IRL racing from that point of view. But, yeah, but at the same time, I think Mywish have got to find ways of making racing more accessible for those lower categories, is the best way I could put it right now, because that Sunday Race Club is a challenge. And I would like them to, you know, to try and find ways of make it more accessible for others. Because, you know, I would say come over and give it a go. I'm riding Boatstone. I'm going to race the ZRL finals, but actually the Sunday Race Club, just because it's a new challenge. And, you know, and actually the other side of that is that I trust, dare I say it, I trust all the riders around me in that group, because I know they've gone through the same validation and verification. So I feel more comfortable that I'm surrounded with legit, if you like, doing that at the moment, then I, unfortunately, I've got to say, then I do some of them ZRL races. But Chris, I said it in words well, and I realise I've pontificated and gone on about that too long. We have to talk about the other big announcement, of course. We recorded some of the footage for this, which is the list. The most impactful people, as you, I, and Aaron saw it, that we released earlier this week. Of course, both our guests were on the list. Ollie and Lionel. So we'll talk to those guys about the list. But been some interesting feedback, some interesting discussion and comments also with the inclusions and some of the omissions from that list.
It's actually been really positive, the reaction and the acceptance of it. And, you know, I remember joking with you yesterday that people are actually reposting it to their socials and actually making it seem like it's something important to them, which is, you know, I was hoping that they would feel that way. And I guess it's really flattering cool. for us that yeah, people, you know, people think that what we're doing is significant enough to, you know, to feel that being on the list is important to them, and that's really flattering and humbling. Yeah. But you know, the reason why we decided to do it was to highlight all these people that have had, you know, basically gotten us to where we are now, and we plan on doing it every year. It won't be so much a historical thing. We'll try to make it year to year be relevant to what happened in that past year, but it should be a list that people in our sport aspire to be on. And, you know, hopefully it'll, you know, gain traction and it'll become more and more popular.
Yeah, I think it's important to say it was a challenge, but, you know, it was a long, long list that we worked through, and we kind of picked a number. We said, you know, we've got to cover it at 50, because we could have put so many more names. And we had some heated discussions, I would say, between the three others of, you know, who we admit and add and so on. And we changed it quite a bit right to the end, really, I guess. But yeah, and that's what it's about, though, Chris. It was about a celebration of those people. And, you know, we're still in the infancy of this sport, who have really made an impact and helped to develop the sport and the events and the platform and the athletes and all these things that we've seen past and present. But as you said, you know, moving forward, as we get to 25, people should aspire on it. It might be more relevant for the year of 24-25 when we do this as well. But I also will say at this point, we have got a show. We are going to be doing the show specifically. We're going to bring Aaron Borrell into that show as well, Chris, and the three of us. We can talk about, you know, why you selected who you did, why I put forward who I did, and Aaron the same. And again, if anyone's got any specific questions that they want and, you know, you want us to answer during that show, then, of course, send them in to myself or Chris, and we can cover that. Chris, though, I think it's time that we get on and we get our guests into the show, because I'd say there's so much we can talk about with Ollie and Lionel, given the fact that they are goats of the sport, the original OGs, whatever you want to see. So let's welcome to the show Ollie Jones and Lionel Vuyasan. All right, Chris, that's enough about us talking about all things Zwift and Mywoosh and the list that we've put out there. I think it is time to get the guests in. So, yeah, do want to welcome to the show the OGs, as we say. It is, of course, Lionel Vuyasan and Ollie Jones. Hey, guys, how are we doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, mate. Thanks for having us.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having
us. Absolute pleasure. No, absolute pleasure. I've been itching to get you guys onto the show for some time. Ollie, I've got to start with the obvious question, because I know you're fresh off a honeymoon, so recently married, right? So you're back today, or where are we at?
Yeah, very recently married. Married last Friday. This is being recorded on Thursday morning, so almost a weekend, but it's time's really flown by. Well,
congratulations. It's a Thursday morning for you, it's a Wednesday evening for the rest of us in Europe, but congratulations, and I'm sure Chris wants to do the same.
Thanks, mate.
Absolutely, congratulations. I Sai is a big fan of weddings. He's had a couple.
Cheers, Chris.
And Leo, you know, it's Ollie got married. When are you going to get married now?
Me?
Yeah,
got too many animals to look after.
Yeah, too many. Like, no, too much duck to do. Like, too much paper to do. Like, no, I'm not. Don't like those big parties and stuff. But I'm in for the honeymoon though.
Nice.
Were you going on holiday anyway, Leo? Because you just told us you're going on a training camp this next week, right?
Yeah, I go into Gran Canaria. But people think it's a training camp, but it's much more vacation. But yeah, let's say it's training camp, so people got scared.
Well, I think people would be worried anyway, Lionel, that's for sure. I think, you know, I say I'm really excited to get you guys on the show. And I just want to give a brief history. I was going to give out a full history of both your sort of backgrounds and Palmares, but to be honest, they're really bloody long. So I'm going to try and keep it as focused as I can and to the point, because there's a couple of key standout moments for me, I guess, in the history of both Lionel and Ollie. I mean, Lionel, first of all, you were the winner of the CDR Cup, which took place back in, that was 2017, 2018 maybe. I remember watching it when I first got into Zwift. You know, it was sort of one of the big events over that was in Vancouver, and I have to say it was one of the most incredible spectacles technically. You know, we'll talk about that in a second, but of course you were also in Zwift Academy in 2020, the year that Jay Vyten won, right?
Yeah, the year with also with the pandemic, so it was a bit different. Like, you know, we were all on not on the same place, like not Mallorca, just everybody's in own country in Airbnbs, and so yeah, it was a weird experience to say the least. It was Zwift Academy, but not really got the experience of it. So
that's a really good point, really good reminder. I hadn't thought about that, because I did watch back the CVR stuff this last week again, just to refresh myself with it. But I didn't watch back that Zwift Academy. But yeah, that's right. You actually didn't travel as a group, right?
No, we didn't ride outside. To be honest, yeah, we ride outside, but everybody on his own place, so it was we didn't have like a sprint lead out training and climbing and stuff like that. It was purely like testing power on Zwift, and you have to say Jay Vyten, he has good power, so you can beat him on the sprint on some sprint, but on the climb he's very strong.
He can absolutely climb. Yeah, but yeah, I guess this is going to lead us on to another topic later, but of course that made it all about the numbers.
I would have loved to get the experience to be with the guys from Alpecin, with the coach from Alpecin on site, and trying to learn from them, because let's be honest, like I don't see myself in the pro peloton. Like, I don't have the skills for that, but would have been great to get like that experience and try to see if I can take something for eSport later. So yeah, on that, it was purely based on your Zwift skills and your power.
All right, well, talk about the Zwift skills then. Oh, I'm going to come on to your Zwift Academy in a second, but let's talk about that CVR win back in Vancouver, because I know it's some time back now, and I said to you in pre-show that you don't seem to have aged at all in this, but you know, that must have been such an incredible experience. I mean, spectacularly, you know, what we saw on, you know, if anyone gets the opportunity in listening to this podcast, go back on YouTube and search for this event, CVR Cup, Vancouver, 2018, I think it was, Leo, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, June.
It looked like such an incredible event. And you were sort of doing back-to-back events as well during the day, right?
Yeah. It was like, over a weekend, we had like five stages, and we have like a really special point system. It was like a points race over like the five stages with different banner of like a different ratio.
Yeah, different multipliers, I remember. Yeah,
that's right. So it was really tactical, and yeah, like I say a couple of times, that was the best event, live events I did, like even better than the Olympics, to be honest. So
Frank Garcia, who was also on the list, was the driving force behind that, Leo, right? And people say that he had a tremendous amount of really good ideas, but when things got really good, the relationship between him and Zwift kind of got soured. And I know that there were some personalities that were in play there, but I can only imagine the way things would be if that was still going now. If it started at that place and we're having trouble getting back to that now, imagine if we were still doing that. know, what is this now, 6 years later or whatever it is, right? Did you ever do any of those CVR Cup races?
No, I think I was just slightly too late on the uptake to get involved with it. Slash also from New Zealand, possibly at a different time zone. But I remember it happening and like kind of being involved at that point, but also like I think I just came in a bit too late, but it looked like a really good event. I remember watching it live and wishing I was there.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder, guys, you know, because let's say you had points on the screen, you know, you could see what was going on live. And even somewhere like the metrics and the other data, Leo, was incredible.
It was like, it's a bit like SOS, to be honest. Like, it was on the screen and you could see in real time the points evolving, like, and the telemetry, it was. I really thought we went backwards for them after that, because
another way that you went backwards is that, Leo, you made a boatload of cash in those events.
Yeah.
You know, you were on your way. If you could put a couple of those together, a month, then you were on your way to being a pro 6 years ago, right? And we're getting back to that point now with what MyWish is doing.
Yeah, but it was different because it was like just one event and one good cash prize for one event. But the plan at the time was, I think Frank said that it would be like every 3 months, something like that. But yeah, to live from that money, you need to be like really the best and win every time, because like, yeah, it's a good amount of cash, of price, but also in the same time, yeah, the level is, when there is money, the level goes up and up and up. So it's really difficult to rely on that.
It was 10 grand that you won for that event. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, that's a big money back then.
Yeah, that's what you earn if you win Zwift Games. But six years ago.
But 6 years ago, yeah. And that's the point, you know, and a lot of the things that happened back then with that CVR Cup, you know, even at a non-elite level, are things that the community are asking for now on Zwift. I've been asking for years on Zwift, just with the points, you know, just to try and make it more interesting. So I scratch my head and I just feel bemused of why it's taken so long to get to that point. And even, you know, we've got some of it now. And, you know, I think on the Zwift Games, we saw some more metrics that we could access as fans, but I don't think you guys could access as riders.
No, that's the thing that I have really difficult to understand why, because we got it on screen in Vancouver, like, and also when you look watch back the race, you can have also the telemetry, and imagine having the telemetry for TTTs. That would make TTTs understandable watch and enjoyable to watch. But yeah, I don't know where this get lost or something.
But hopefully they can find the way back to that point, because you're right, it makes it understandable. But, you know, let's be honest, a lot of esports athletes and you know, people who are interested in the sport, they tend to be data nerds anyway. So, you know, that's why things like Source and so on exist. Yeah. Right, well, I want to just jump onto the Zwift Academy and Ollie, let's bring you into this, because, of course, that was how you sort of launched on the scene for me back in 2018 with Zwift Academy. So why don't you just give us a bit of background on that experience and what it did for, you know, for your career as such.
Yeah, I've been getting involved with some of the Zwift races probably in the month, 2 or 3 months beforehand. That was a series called the Australian Esports Series, and that was a really big thing for me back then. We had weekly racing, and it was like a potentially 10-week maybe kind of league, I guess. And I'd been doing really well in those, and that was kind of my first real introduction into esports, basically. And then, like, just as I was kind of like hitting my stride and getting some wins in there, they announced that the first Zwift Academy for men was going to be happening that year. And yeah, I just jumped on board and just fully committed to it, basically planned my next month and a half or 2 months of training entirely around it. And yeah, I'm not sure that many people back then committed to it as hard as I did, especially because Zwift Academy is such a, it happens really late in the year, and a lot of people who are like already involved in road cycling and things like that, that's, it happens after contract season, so it's it becomes really quite hard for people to commit so fully to it. And I'd quite recently just switched from my main sport being inline speed skating. That was my main sport since I was about 4 years old. Okay. I went to, I don't know, 6 world champs or something for it. And so I didn't really have that full background in cycling. So it kind of gave me a lot more ability to really commit to Zwift Academy when it arrived for me.
It's really interesting you say that, because I went through Pro Stats as well before the show, and also I went on both your Zwift powers and to see how far back we could go for both of you. And that was a question I had, Ollie, because I couldn't find too much data on the bike before that kind of time, really. And then, of course, you went straight into, you know, that pro contract, I guess. You know, so you clearly got the engine, but you'd not been like, you know, like a lot of the Leos, I was going to say the classic Belgium youngsters that come through the system, but, you know, that's what happens over in Europe a lot. But you didn't have that same sort of progression in the sport then.
Yeah, definitely. The first year that I like fully took seriously on the bike would have been like my year at Dimension Data, which was my last year in the under 23 grade. So, yeah, I was really late to the scene. I'd always cross-trained on the bike. It's like a very common thing to cross-train on the bike, but I didn't have the like racing experience in Europe as a cyclist. Like, I had years in Europe as a speed skater, which is, it has a lot of similarities, like big pelotons. This is like on concrete and wheels, not ice. Big pelotons, close racing, things like that. But yeah, I didn't have that like specific bike stuff until my last year under 23 there with Dimension Data.
Yeah, so that must have been a bit of a, because I mean, cycling, we spoke about this a bit, Chris, before, but it's quite full of these little unique idiosyncrasies, and there's quite a personality, I would say, to the sport from that point of view. You know, these little things that you should and shouldn't do as a cyclist. So that must have taken a bit, you know, particularly coming over to Europe as that first year and getting to these, used to these nuances, I guess. But I can see that you've been pretty busy on the road since then, though, because you're still riding national championships. You've been over to Europe in the last couple of years as well and ridden some events over here. So you're obviously still clearly active on the road as well as in esports, right?
Yeah, so last year I was pro continental with the Black Spoke pro cycling team, Bolden Equities, but unfortunately that folded due to some hard times in the financial sector. So it's kind of just given me a bit more opportunity to really focus back onto esports this year, and I think it's a good time to be refocusing with the things that MyWish is doing in the sector, particularly with the UCI. I think it's, I think like you said, there was a real peak 6 years ago or whatever, and it kind of went a little bit astray from there, which is kind of definitely the feeling that I got as well, and probably was a good time for me to do a bit more road and have a bit more fun with that. And now it's a good time to come back and really focus for the hopefully the next big peak coming up.
Ollie, you have transitioned us into the next question really beautifully there, so appreciate you doing that. But that you know, that's what we've got to talk about, because you're both, of course, racing on MyWish week in, week out. I see you on that screen. Thankfully, you and I are in very different categories with the two of you versus me. But, you know, we're on the same video feed, which is a good start. But, you know, you guys are racing there. So why don't you give us a little bit of background, Leo, first, of why you, because, you know, you've got this long history in Zwift racing. You know, why the transition now to MyWish is, I'm guessing that's your predominant racing platform right now.
Yeah. To be fair, I was like a big fan of Ollie doing the, what they called the Friday Race Club at the time, because it was on Fridays, not on Sundays. But I wasn't really able to do it because of work, actually, like just because of that. And then I tried once, like 2 years ago, but it was only on mobile device, and I couldn't follow the action on the mobile. It was too small. And
yep.
Then when they finally upload like the computer, the PC version, I say, okay, like, I give it a go. And so I try it. I kind of love it straight away because like you had, I think you had an interview with Matt Smith and saying that SSE is about rewarding the strongest riders, and that's something I was missing on Zwift. So yeah, the change, the switch, I would say the switch of focus is basically based on that, because the platform suits me better than the other, to be honest. So yeah, this is what it is.
So Ollie, you made the jump first then to MyWish.
Yeah, I was.
He's an OG there.
Yeah, OG, yeah.
I think I was potentially one of the, or potentially the first non-Arabic rider. It was way back in 2020, I think. And I remember I got a phone call from Greg Henderson, and he was on the Zwift podcast at the time with Kev Poulton. And he's saying, Kev's got this new job at this new platform. And he's like, I don't know much about it. He just kind of up and left to be a coach there. And then I had a look on Instagram. There was probably like a couple of hundred followers on it or something at that time. And I just missed the very first race. I think it might have been like September 2020 or something like that. Missed it by about 2 days and I was gutted. But then, I think they had the next one like a month later. This was basically exactly the same as what we have at the SRC now, but it was just more like a monthly race club. And it was me and my good mate Alex West. We went into it. Yeah, just been kind of stuck into it ever since. So yeah,
for the two of you guys, I can obviously see why you would like the SRC, considering the huge engines that you both are. Ollie, did you have a chance to race any of the classics ever when you were racing in Europe?
Not any of the real big classics. The biggest race that I've probably done would be, in terms of like the classics, would be Skeldepriest, I guess. Also rode the Tour of Belgium last year.
The reason why I mention it is that I don't know if you remember, Leah, when you and I had the interview for the article, you said that the SRC races are the closest that esports has to the classics, and that's what you find appealing about them.
What I was saying is that just what I like about SRC is like what we talk about in the article is just when you watch a classic, a big classic like Ronde van Vlaanderen, and you, what you like is not to have like a full peloton. You just want to see the best guys fighting each other in the last 50Ks. And the way the dynamics is on MyWish and the way SRC like courses are designed is just to make that selection early, so you can have that kind of racing in the second half of the race, for example. So I really like that. I don't really like, for me, esports is not made to be with like 100 of riders or 200 riders on the start line. It's boring to watch and it doesn't make any sense. So yeah, that's why I love SSE so much.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't hear the bit pre-show, but Leo, what I said, the reason why I've made the jump now to pretty much racing on there is because, first of all, I'm learning a new skill because it's very different to ride on there, as you know. But also, like I said, the racing is much more tactical. It's a hell of a lot harder. I mean, I am pretty much hitting my 20-minute best power week in, week out currently.
Yeah,
and I haven't done that on Zwift, even though I'm racing a race on Zwift. I haven't done that for such a long time because there's so many people on there in the races and I could sit in, and it doesn't matter whether it's the Epic Zwift Games race or whether it's a ZRL long race. You know, you can sit in and get away with it and wait to the end. And actually, that made me think, going back to that CVR win of yours, going back then, there were not many of you in that field, and that's what made the racing dynamic.
Exactly, like we were only 10 riders. So if you make like a move, like really try attacking the other guys, they can't hide. So they have to respond. And in SRC, it's almost the same. So it's pretty tactical because it's so hard that you know that if you make a mistake, you're going to burn a match. And you don't have a lot of matches on the MyWish race. So yeah, it's super fun to race. And like you say, you're eating 20 minutes per every week. But to be honest, like, I see my progression since I joined my Whoosh regularly. It's part of the thing that I got, like, maybe the 2-4% better than 2 years ago, because the racing is so demanding and it's a super hard training, super hard workout. So
Absolutely. I know we want to talk about some of those numbers. I do want to ask you about the dynamics, though, because I get questions about it. I'm sure you get questions about it. It's very different from Zwift, I would say. You know, and it does take a bit of getting used to. But, you know, both of you are, you know, I say you've been on Zwift a long, long time. But Leo, just come to you on this one. What are your thoughts about the actual, you know, the physics, the dynamics and difference between the two? Have you found that difficult to make that transition? Do you prefer them? Do you not like them? You know, where are you at with it?
Honestly, like, the transition, it was just trying to survive. Like, I did not get dropped in the first race. But yeah, it's different because the draft is not as powerful, of course, like, obviously, and you need to find different way to save energy, and sometimes saving energy is meaning just to be at the front and do your own tempo, for example. You know, it's not like on Zwift where you can sit at the back of the bunch and just move up at the right time and it's going to be all right with just the timing. On my Whoosh, it's not like that. You need to be clever. You need to be smart with your energy and how you manage that. So I would say it's not really about the physics. I don't really look at that. It's just the way the race unfold and the race go. But I think Oli is maybe better than me to answer the question about physics on the game. Me, I just try to survive and make the other guy suffer. So.
Well, I want to ask you that question, Ali, but I want to ask you in a different way. You both have, I'm sure you have aspirations on the World Championships again this year, right? And, you know, before I ask you about what you think of the format, do you think that because you have so much experience on My Whoosh that you're going to have an advantage over the Zwift racers that have been reluctant to move over to the platform?
Short answer, yes. It makes a massive difference. And I think particularly in a couple of years ago, we're seeing like if a lot of the known Zwift names kind of dabbling in it, and they'd basically come get their head kicked in for 2 weeks because it was just so different, and they just wouldn't come back because no one really committed to actually learning how My Whoosh was different and adapting to that. So, yeah, I think it is a big advantage to actually know the platform. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, while we're on the subject, then, what do you think of the format for this year?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not, like, it's very not SRC. Like, SRC yes. is all about just being really rough races, basically. Like, they're all hard. Like, there's no race that we do. Like, I don't know, there's probably, like, 7 courses or something that we kind of cycle through at the moment, and none of them are easy. Like, they're all like, you're all going to hit some sort of PB at some point in the race during them to like actually be in the front and competing for those top 5 places. Worlds is going to be I'd say more, I'm not sure if you'd say like more tactical, but yeah, I know there's going to only be 20 riders again in the finals, and that with like short races and kind of a point structure to it as well, I think, yeah, it lends itself to be kind of similar to back to what CVR was back 6 years ago, which I think is a pretty interesting kind of reflection that we've touched upon earlier here.
Well, I say SRC is so different than what we've typically seen cycling esports in the past. So, you know, if I use the last World Championships on Zwift as an example, then, and obviously we've seen some people come and go at the top level in SRC because it's just so different and so difficult. Do you think this new format is going to make it more accessible maybe for some of those traditional Zwift elites to come and have a real go at this because it's so different than what the SRC?
I'm I would potentially say it's harder because there is no room for mistakes. Like, if you, like, SRC is always 45K, which is quite a substantial race in terms of what we used to with esports. Like, all the races are over an hour. There's some times in the race where you can't make a mistake, but there's other times where it's a little bit not so important. Whereas if you put everyone, it's the same platform, it's the same dynamics. They're going to be using snippets of similar courses. I think it just makes it like more important that you just can't make a mistake from kilometer zero to the finish.
Well, one thing I noticed after watching the Zwift Games, the Epic Championship race that I think you participated in, Ali, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Sai and myself had this conversation that there really wasn't that much of a breakup of the field. There really wasn't a selection, right? There were some climbs in the beginning, but you guys got, you're so strong and the dynamics pulled you over the climbs. And then it was an uphill sprint for the finish, right? And you ended up doing really well because you're super strong. But one of the things that Matt told us when we asked him about the format in that second stage, I think it is, that they put in a really steep 4-minute climb because that was the physiological determinator between a sprinter and a climber, or a sprinter and a puncher.
Mm-hmm.
And, we almost think that if the Epic Championship had a climb like that early on that ripped the race apart, and then there was some chasing going on, and there was, we had to like actually make some moves and do some things, that race could have been a ton more interesting and more compelling. And the fact that MyWoosh is actually taking that into account for their world championship format final is, shows to me that they've given this a lot of thought and that they want to really create a product that's going to be, redefining what the world championships means to us.
Yeah, you mean if the Zwift Epic race actually went up the Epic KOM?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And the Raja Tour.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I really like about MyWoosh is their... I think it might just be a fact that it's kind of a smaller knit group that's kind of running it, but it's a lot more receptive to things that the racers want and abilities to make the races better. I feel like there's a really good opportunity for basically anyone that's involved in the platform to kind of give their experiences and give their feedback on things that they like or dislike within the races, and that's heard. I feel like it's heard, which is refreshing to me.
Yeah, I get that, and I think I've said this to Chris before, but my experience with MyWish, I've been on there since October racing the Sunday Race Club, is I got on there thinking, right, I can survive and sprint. You can't bloody do that on SRC. There is, I say I'm not an A, really, but I can get round most A races by surviving and sprinting. There's no chance you can do that on a Sunday Race Club. It just does not happen. Something just popped into my head there, because we obviously, I keep mentioning this CVR World Cup now, but of course, there was £10,000, $10,000 up for grabs there. And, if that, we've said before, if that was on a regular basis, you could make a living. You guys must be making a living now, because there's some good money up. Are we at the point where you guys are a full-time cycling esports athlete? Because that's what I'd like to see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Obviously, if you look at the numbers, for sure you can make a living out of it. But you also have to take into consideration that, let's say I go training tomorrow, I got hit by a car, I'm out for 6 months. No money for 6 months. So it's a gamble, So
yep.
It's different that pro cyclist where you have a salary. Yeah, you have a security. Here, if you really want to live from the MyWoosh SRC prize money, you really have to be lucky not to have any sickness, any injuries, and be consistent all year long, which is really, really hard.
I think that's one thing that I've really had to take account when planning, because, I consider this my full-time occupation. You've got to acknowledge that you can't be good all of the time. Like you can be top 10, I'd say, all of the time, but I mean you need to be in the top 5. And acknowledging that you can't hold your form forever, and you have to have times where you really target the wins, and then other times where, all right, you actually need to step back a little bit, do a bit more training, potentially not do so well in the races, but then have another go at it. Because, like, you know, if you look at like the road cycling, like people target 3 weeks of the classics, have time off, do a grand tour later in the year. Like they're not starting in January and racing every weekend until October and expecting to be at the top every weekend. And I think that's really a bit of a something that you can fall into when there is, like, it's just very, very linear, like very every week you've got this money on this, like it's really hard to specify downtime, but I think it is really important for longevity.
So let me ask you then a really open question then, Ollie. You know, because you're right. I mean, you know, essentially, it's just you just keep going every Sunday, but it's not possible to operate at that level. So where does the sport go next? How do you think that, you know, that do we get a season? You know, do we have a season of classics? You know, that we focus on. What do you guys think comes next? Ollie, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, maybe potentially if it was like different courses for different times of the year, maybe it could like add a bit of variation towards, like, all right, this time of the year you're all classics riders or something like that, you know, and you got these sets of riders they're going to come before, and then maybe a bit later we'd like to see a bit more concentration of races like Jebel Hafit or something, and then some more climbers. But I haven't really thought of it, to be honest. I don't know what Leo has to say.
Well, the reason I asked the question, you know, and I'll come to you next, is I know when Chris has spoke to the UCI, this has been mentioned before, that, you know, there may even be a series of events that are UCI sanctioned that are multi-platform as well, for example. So, you know, just trying to figure out, what, you know, where you guys are at. You know, you mentioned the classics there, Ollie, but of course, you know, if you get a team, you know, like Ineos now, they don't all go and do the classics and then the Grand Tours. You've got certain riders for different events. So, you know, and maybe that is the way it goes, that, you know, you guys have got strength and depth with, you know, coalition with you guys and Kaminsky and, you know, and so on. But what are your thoughts then, Ollie? Sorry, Leo, where does it go? What do you think it looks like, you know, in the midterm?
Yeah, I think it's a hard job for the UCI also, like, because can talk about classics, but the classics, the base, the foundation from the classics is the history. And in esports, you don't have any history. So it's difficult to really, really give credit to a race just saying that, oh, that race is the big one. You know, you can do it with the World Championship because there is the rainbow jersey behind it, with the story behind it, the rainbow jersey. But in esports, it's kind of difficult. So my best idea would be like to get like something like a world tour, an esport tour, something like that, with, okay, you say you do those teams, there is like a small amount of riders, like really the top riders, like maybe the 20 riders that go to the world championship, something like that, but that go on a regular basis doing specific racing, like more probably this would be like a good thing. But it's really hard to really see what it's possible to do before somebody tries something. So look, for example, like the My Wish Championship last year, like having like 1 week of super hard racing, like everybody was training for that, and it was an insane experience. Even for a rider like me, that I have a lot of experience, it's something that I never did before. So you need to find those kind of events that really stand out, and so people can focus on that. But yeah, I think it's still up to the UCI to find the correct formula, I think.
Yeah, and I think that that's definitely a challenge for them. When I spoke to Michael Rogers over in Abu Dhabi, and I mentioned the international calendar and the international ranking system, I saw the look on his face kind of go like, yeah, you know, we really have plans for that, but we're not anywhere near where we're going to be able to do that just yet. We're speaking about the money and, you know, what it means to you guys. So back on January 21st, when you received the annulment message from MyWoosh after that race, you guys each probably stood to lose 2,000 euros apiece right after that race because you finished second and third there. I've asked Leo this question already, so I want to ask you, Ollie, how did you feel when you initially got the annulment message from MyWoosh and found out that they were questioning your performance there?
Oh, like, really confused. Yeah, I really didn't know because nothing really stood out to me in terms of the data in that race. I thought that was potentially one of the easier races that we'd had recently. And again, like, me and Leo have such a history within esports. I say, like, we're two of the earliest guys that were really, like, really competing in it. And yeah, two guys that have never had any sort of questions over our performances as well. So yeah, really, really confused. But then, I mean, more than happy to go over and prove ourselves as well, because, yeah, like, we trust in our own abilities and our own abilities to do that. So I think while it was confronting at the time, I think it's really good both for us and for esports in general going forward that we have kind of done this and shown precedent of what is possible.
Yeah, so, you know, Leo, you mentioned that the letter that you received was almost like a legal letter, and like you were almost frightened by it.
Yeah, it's just like the term they use it, and I've been talking with Matt Smith about that, and he said, yeah, but they have no choice. And that's true, because there is money on the line, so there's money, so legal stuff going on also comes with it. So yeah, but the thing is that when you receive the email and it's, you think about everything. Like, I was thinking about, oh, my reputation, because I have a clean record since the beginning I started racing. I never had like any annulment or something, apart from maybe one problem with the trainer one day, but this is all. But you said, yeah, there was like 2,000 euros, would say, on the line, but there's way much more than that, because if you don't succeed, you get a ban, you get everything questioned. And so of course this is something super hard to deal with, and when you have to wait for the opportunity to go, because going there to do tests, I would have been more than happy to do that like a year ago, like, no problem. Just I was just kind of pissed off because they had to wait for that to invite me, you know, for there is like maybe a suspicion or something. But yeah, in the end, that's, I think, is the best approach still.
So in the research for the article that I wrote, and, you know, I documented this as thoroughly as I possibly could, so anybody listening can go read the article and get all the details. But I also interviewed Matt for, you know, it was like for an hour and a half or whatever. And he told me, and Sai, I think you actually participated in the race. And he said that it wasn't necessarily that it was a hard race, but the race was so dynamic that you guys were repeatedly doing like 2-minute efforts over and over and over and over. And they don't have any data for that type of a performance, because that's not the way that the pro Peloton races. So the fact that you guys are, you know, are trained as esports athletes and you're trained to do those short repeated efforts is what their performance metrics hadn't seen before, which, you know, I guess, you know, they're doing their due diligence, right, as far as they see it. And the fact that they have the resources to pull you in, it is something else too. So I know, Leo, you were flown in and tested on to Abu Dhabi and tested on the 9th, and then Ali, you were there a week later. So I'm curious, Ali, and because I've discussed it with Leo also, but what was your reception when you flew into Abu Dhabi? Like, did you were you treated well? Were you put in the best position to succeed? Was it one of these things where you were, you know, whisked off the plane onto a trainer and expected to give your best performance?
I think I was really lucky in the fact that I was allowed to do it basically the week after Leo and Mikhail had done it, because I knew what to expect. I think we were all lucky that we were in it together. I think if it was one of us singled out, it would have been really hard mentally. But I think that the fact that it was three of us, it made it a lot easier, because like we're in constant communications. We're all on the same team. We all had shoulders to lean on. And yeah, I kind of knew what I was expecting when I arrived into Abu Dhabi. And yeah, it was really good. Like, rocked up on the plane and from the plane and had my driver there. He was going to drive me from Dubai to Abu Dhabi. It was early in the morning. I think I arrived 6 in the morning or something, and hopped in the car. He's telling me, yeah, put your seat back, put everything back, just go to sleep, don't worry about anything. You're here to do a job. I'm here to do my job. I drive, you sleep, get ready to do your thing. And yeah, it was great. I rocked up and they gave me a trainer to, because I think you've talked about it before on another podcast, the roads aren't kind of suitable for cycling there. They've got fantastic facilities in terms of bike path, bike tracks and stuff, but it's kind of a little sketchy just on general roads. So they gave us our bikes that we're going to do the testing on, and trainers, so you could train in the hotel if you wanted to. They told you where the nearest places were to take a taxi to and train and whatnot, if you were going to do that. And I think in the end, it's never going to be easy for a guy like me who has to, from New Zealand, be on a plane for 20 or so hours and get there, and then realistically they can't have me there for 2 weeks for me to fully get into the time zone, and I wouldn't want to do that either. So I did my testing about 48 hours after I hopped off the plane, which is rough, but I felt like it was accounted for the whole time, and I think it was kind of the best that anyone could really really do in this sort of situation.
Let me ask you that question then, Ollie, because you said essentially this is your job right now. This is what you're focused on and committed. So in a way, you're riding for your career, at that point, after doing a super long flight over there. So, but at the same time, I guess you've done those numbers in the past. But did you have any sort of element of doubt in your own mind of shit, I've got to really produce this again now under that pressure? What was the pressure like? Was there any?
Of course, I felt pressure. I was surprisingly not that nervous before it. Like I say, I know I'm entirely capable of doing the numbers I do. I'd do it. The circumstances are pretty hard to be doing your very best numbers, but I was confident in doing it. But there was always going to be pressure. Whenever you have a lot riding on something that essentially just comes down to your ability on one day, one day, any number of things can go wrong. So yeah, I'm glad I just managed to stay calm and get through it and put it behind me, but I'm still glad I did it.
Leo, I've got a question for you. I asked Chris a question before we jumped in with you guys, because this article that Chris wrote about the annulments is one of the most viewed articles on the Zimini K platform. It's one of the articles we've had more engagement than most others. And I asked Chris a question whether he got paid to do the article. And I'll be honest, some people messaged and asked if it was a PR stunt, from my wishy's point of view. Leo, was that brought to you at any point that might be the thing, or can you give me a better background on that?
I can tell you the handshake with Matt Smithson when we arrived there, that was cold. cold. I will not say anything else, but no, let's be honest, of course, getting verified for my wish is also a good thing. So, because they can say that their riders, they are legit, they are the top of the SRC race. So if the top of SRC race is legit, come race with us. That's for sure. But yeah, they gave us good condition. Honestly, like the only thing that I was a bit worried is that we couldn't use the trainer the day before the test. We didn't have access to the studio the day before the test. So we just came into the studio and then 15 minutes later that you go for your test. So it's, you know, you don't know the environment. You don't know. Yeah, you don't know what to expect, really. So can I produce what I produce at home on that kind of circumstances? This is always like a tricky question because, yeah, you don't really know how your body is going to react, but we were confident on the number, so.
Can I ask you another difficult question then, Leo?
Yeah.
And this is about other athletes. The other thing I mentioned to Chris before is my concern at the moment is that there's a lot of discussion between athletes and coaches and teams, which is quite negative and confrontational at times. And I think there's a danger, I've said this before, that you know the sport can almost implode on itself if we end up just throwing mud around all the time. Do you guys get confronted with this? Do you guys get called out? You know, and how do you deal with it? How do you feel about that?
Nobody call you out in front of you, like in your face, mate. Like it's always like messaging, but there's the problem with remotes, with having remote racing. This is always going to be suspicious. You're never really next to the guy that do the effort. That's why we need live events so bad. Like we need to get those guys on a regular basis doing stuff in front of everybody. So the more we have stuff like that, the better the discipline is going to be, because yeah, you can't say anything if the guys do that in front of you.
It kind of made me laugh when I was reading the comments to the article that I wrote, because people were saying to me, oh yeah, you know, Leo and Ollie, they've been you know, producing these numbers forever. They've been fully transparent. You know, they've been tested under numerous scenarios. Well, Matt came flat out and told me, you know, guys have been emailing us and telling us that you know, they're suspect of Ollie and Leo's performances. So it kind of just like goes to show you that the people that are commenting and, you know, they don't really know what's going on, just like you and I don't know what's going on. There's a lot more to these stories than what's, you know, meets the eye.
Yeah, honestly, between us, we know. We all know. We have reservation on some riders, but yeah, for me, I don't want to talk about things publicly, or I don't want, like, Oli knows my opinions about some guys. I would love some guys to be tested as we have been tested, of course. But I don't want to lose waste my energy on that. Like, it is what it is. Absolutely. Deal with it. I can still beat those guys anyway. So
100%. And to be honest, that was exactly the comment before from me, that you know, when that's kind of back and forth of mudslinging happens, it's just overall negative for the sport. That is certainly not a rising tide raising all ships when that happens.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we've just, again, Chris and I have discussed is that it's making that accessible. And live events is one of them, Leo. You've mentioned that. But it's also about having consistency and having the testing accessible. Live events, you can do that. But of course, you guys were fortunate enough to go to Abu Dhabi to get that testing done. But obviously, that's not always available to everyone. But at the same time, if I look at some of the other platforms and the other verification takes place, we also know that the verification is only with a small number of athletes who finish in the top 3, top 10, top 5, whatever it might be. But with SRC, just as an example, I'm a Cat 3 rider, you know, suffering to get around anywhere near the top 10. You guys are at the top of the tree, but we get the same level of testing and verification week in, week out.
Yeah. This is what my watch do, I don't say better than the other, but they really get into it every week. So this is like, if I was Cat 3, for example, let's say it's going to be C race on Zwift, it's a wild west, you know? But here you can have like every week a race that you know that's going to be verified by like people that know their things. So this gives legitimacy to the sport, and I would be so much more keen to race that race that I know is going to be probably more legit than what I do on the other platform. So yeah, kudos to them for that, because this is a huge, huge work, and yeah, it has to be done. So if you want to be a legit platform, it has to be done.
So the actual testing itself, I want to ask you both about this. They brought you in the morning. I think it was like around 10 a.m. and they had you do like a modified Power Passport test. So you did a 3-minute effort and then a 12-minute effort. Right.
This is
and
the
then they let
test.
You read.
That is exactly
this
the power
passport. Right. This is the exact one.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And then they gave you like 4 or 5 hours off, and then they had you come back for the test that they were actually testing for, which was to test your reproducibility, right? So they had you do, I think it was the pre-fatigue test was 3 2-minute efforts, erg mode at 500 watts with some recovery, and then you rested for 8 minutes, and then you did an all-out 2-minute effort.
Yeah.
And I saw the pictures of both of you guys laying on the ground after that, and it seemed pretty clear to me that it wasn't a PR stunt after that. But, you know, what did you think of the format for the testing? You know, having you come back and then do the pre-fatigue test, Ali, did you think that really got at the issue and actually was it an opportunity to really prove what you could do?
Yeah, I think that I really enjoyed that pre-fatigue test.
I hate it.
Yeah. No, but it was nice. I think just giving more opportunity to test kind of spread the load a little bit mentally. Like if it was all just going over there and all you're going to do is you're going to rock up and you're going to do power profile test and then you're going to go home, I think that probably would have been harder for me mentally. But having the power profile test, then you got this other test to do, and then you got a day off, and then you race the SRC. It's spread the load mentally for me in terms of getting the whole thing done. I guess it's like, you know, when you take small goals to get to your big goal or something. I enjoyed it.
I didn't.
So Si, when I was discussing it with both of these guys to try to convince them to come on the podcast, Ali was sincerely disappointed with the numbers that he put up for the test.
Oh, really?
He said a couple of times, I know I could do better. You know, it was piss poor. And just to give you an indication, he did, what do we have here? 6.5 watts per kilo for 12 minutes, 8.3 for 3 minutes, and then pre-fatigue did 8.8 for 2 minutes. And Leo did 6.5 for 12, 8.1 for 3, and then he did 8.8 for 2. And like, you know, that the fact that you guys are doing numbers that are so comparable, and right. You know, the 8.8 for 2 being pre-fatigued, you know, that's what makes you both, you know, exceptional esports athletes, is your ability to do that. You know, I just want, you know, speaking in those terms, do you feel that what you do now, and you have a really interesting perspective, Ali, because you've raced on the road and now you've transitioned to become, you know, a pro esports athlete. Do you think that it's a totally different physiology that what you are both excelling at this point?
Absolutely, 100%. I think you saw, or you can look back at the results or whatever. When I came back from Europe last year, what was it, October or something? Admittedly, I wasn't in fantastic form on the road anyway at that point, but I was pretty bad on Woosh, and it took me a couple of months to really get it back into it, and that was a couple of months of very specific training. I've coached myself for pretty much my whole career. I had a team coach last year, and I've had quite a bit of consultation from Greg Henderson as well throughout the years, but for the most part I've been my own coach, and that's because I don't think that people or a lot of traditional coaches really appreciated how physiologically different some of these efforts are. And yet that is one thing that I absolutely focus on in my training, is being able to recover at a super short amount of time at pretty high power, which is essentially what esports comes down to, because you're on the trainer for an hour, you're racing full gas, you don't have time to recover. You know, so that's kind of the main thing, is what I focus my physiology around and my training. And it's interesting that that's what Matt had said, basically, in terms of the testing.
I just want to skip back about the Zwift Games. You mentioned the World Championships there again as well, and obviously the format's changed. let's be honest, the Zwift Games is, I wouldn't say a reaction, but it's a result of them losing the World Championship bid for the next couple of years. You both did it. I think you both did some of the events. I don't think you did all of them. But I'm just interested, Leo, I'm going to ask you this question, of what you thought of the format of the Zwift Games.
Yeah, the format is... It's a Zwift format. Like, it suits the Zwift platform well, I would say, because it's something that makes a bit what you see in Zwift Grand Prix with, like, some new thing or so. So I think, like, the format was really nice, honestly, like, which I didn't buy. That's why the reason I didn't really race it, it's too many riders. Like, I don't see the point. I really don't see the point to have so many riders. Like, that's why I tried the first race, because there is the elimination race. And then I arrive in the second race, I try a couple of attacks. Nothing really works. It's just like, I was thinking, like, people just wait for the sprint. And the epic race, I watched the epic race, it was the same. And I hesitated, like, in the morning of the race, I was like, should I do it? And then, no. Because the, like you said, the course, you have no chance to make any difference on such a course before. So it was basically like, who can sprint with, like, the fatigue from the 80 kilometers on something? That's why Oli was so powerful and so successful in that race, because I'm pretty sure that's the SLC training that helped him for that. But for the rest, yeah, I wasn't. There's too many people. I don't see. It's not my vision of esports, unfortunately. Like, I like the guy from Zwift. What they do, a great job. But I think I don't share the same vision.
So you competed in the Sprint Championship, and then you didn't compete in the Epic Championship, and then the very next day you won the SRC race, which was in the Belgium World.
Yeah.
Right. Were you, for the Sprint Championship, were you holding back, knowing that you had the SRC the next day, and, you know, that's what you want to race, and that's what pays the bills? And you not race the Epic because you wanted to win that Belgium race, because it was a simulation of your home country? You know, that seems like it would be a big race for you.
Yeah, because also I've been second on that course so many times. I wanted to win once, but yeah, this. My focus was SLC, of course, because, like, winning the Zwift race, like, for example, like Cami did, like Mihar did, it's such a gamble, you know? Like, you can win big money, but there's so many people, there's so many things that can happen. I feel so much more in control in SLC, because I know it's only going to be the strongest riders. So if I'm on a good day, I know I can do top five. And then if I'm really good day, I know I can win. But on Zwift, even if I'm on a really good day, I'm sure of nothing. So yeah, my focus was on the SLC.
I think those are really interesting comments. Chris and I was in Los Angeles with Chris the week before, and we met with Jacob Fraser, for example. And I kind of, with what you were saying, Leo, and he said the same thing. He said that the format and the individual races, just from a spectacle point of view, you know, me as a fan, should be long enough. Each stage should be long enough that you can drink a pint of beer, go to the bar in between the three stages, and come back and you drink your beer through the next one. So I think my view is that the format in terms of having multiple events is the right one. But I think, as Leo was saying there, the big problem is the numbers. When you've got so many people in that race, because the other comment someone made to me, Lionel, was that, why do we never see the numbers, the power numbers from, let me be bluntly, from yourself, Oli and Michael, because you guys are racing SLC, on Zwift that we see on MyWish? My take on that, and I told you guys, I went through your pass with power. You don't need to on a lot of Zwift races, because you can sit in the bloody draft and sprint, right?
Yeah, that would be stupid. Like, honestly, just like, it doesn't match the platform. That's all. Like, and it's also like the reason I would reverse the question: why the guys that so successful on Zwift, when they come to MyWish, the numbers are not the same, or they got dropped after 10 minutes. This is just like how you adapt to your platform and like the demand. So you go with the demand, and some platforms suit better some riders, and some platform is different. So this is just I'm just lucky to be competitive. I'm just lucky to be competitive on different one. It's even on Indie Vero or something like that. But
so one of the things that you mentioned earlier, Ali, was that you feel heard with MyWoosh. Mm-hmm. And one of the complaints that I have with some of the other platforms is that they don't choose to elevate their own stars, right? They don't choose to elevate Lionel and Ali Jones. They want, you know, big time pros to be the face of their platform. Do you feel that the people at MyWoosh are supporting you and want to elevate you as the, you know, as the face of the platform?
Yeah, I definitely get a lot more of that from Woosh, and particularly when they have access to guys like, I mean, they are a major sponsor of UAE Team Emirates. It's like they have access to guys like Tade. Tade was at the press conference a few weeks ago, but I don't think they try to really force that like some other platforms do. And yeah, like I just feel like I can say my piece in terms of, I mean, they asked me, like, we had a new update. What do you think of it? What do you think of it as one of our like long-standing races at the top of SRC? Like, what do you think changed? How did that feel? And I think that sort of review system, like, really, I really like it. Like I say, like we do these little like review forms at the end of, say, like Zwift Grand Prix and things like that, and I think I say the same thing every single time, and every single time it kind of goes the other way. And like I say, like Leo said earlier, like there's like a discrepancy between what Zwift's vision is for esports is what kind of his vision is for esports, and that's probably the kind of same sort of boat that I'm at, and I feel like I align much better with what my Woosh's vision for esports is. And that's kind of just end of the day choices of different companies, I guess.
Chris, let me say this. Chris has had this question that he's been asking every guest for the last couple of weeks. And I don't think we can ask the question, Chris, because Chris has been asking this question, Zwift Games or World Championships. For you guys, I think it's really obvious. I actually think a better question is Zwift Games or SRC, you know, from that point of view. Because we know the World Championships, you're going to select that every day over the Zwift Games, I think, based on what you two have just said. So Zwift Games or SRC, honestly, I think you've probably already answered the question, Lionel.
SRC.
I guess it's going to be the same for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The only reason why I raced the Zwift Epic race was because it finished on the Zwift Forward KOM, and I know that finish, and I was confident that I could run top three. I did hundreds of goes up there before the first Zwift Worlds in, 2020, which finished on the same climb, and I was confident for it. That's, if it finished on the beach sprint 2K earlier, I wouldn't have raced. I would have just focused solely on SRC.
So I know after we finish our interview for the article, Leo, you had some really strong feelings about the whole process and the way it went, and the impressions that are received over, you know, in the community from MyWoosh. So do you want to just conclude with what your feelings were about your experience there and moving forward with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it was hard when we got the email, but you really quickly switch in your mind saying that it's not just like a verification, it's an opportunity. Like, because they gave us the opportunity to say, okay, we can do that number, we can show that numbers. So now, yeah, what do you have to say about it? So for us, it was a great, great, great opportunity. And I was really happy to go there and meet the guys also that you exchanged email with. And it also give me another perspective on their work and what they do for the sport we love. So yeah, I really was really like an eye opener also from that perspective. not only on the testing, because the testing, like Oli said, we were confident that we can do the numbers. Like, there's no problem with that. You know, there's just like always like a bit of stress because you never really know how your body is going to react to the travel and the environment. But for the rest, we were super confident, to be honest. But seeing those guys, seeing also even just the guy that worked for the streams and stuff like that, it was very, like, very nice. And I have to say, like, my wish, they deserve really a lot more credit on the esports scene for what they do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, the reception that I received when I was there, and of course I was there on a press tour, you know, you know, they were trying to make an impression.
You got the good hotel, right?
It was a very interesting experience, but I know I'm very happy that I accepted the opportunity to go. It was great, but I look forward to hopefully shaking both of your hands in person in Abu Dhabi in October.
I hope so.
Yeah, 100%.
Do everything for that.
You bet.
Yeah, we guys, myself, Chris, and I'm sure a lot of the community will be rooting for you guys at that event as well. I just want to say, actually, just to highlight, it wasn't just you two that obviously went over to Abu Dhabi not testing. So I know we're really grateful for you guys to speak to Chris and come on the show and talk to us. But other athletes have also been and gone and done that testing as well. So, you know, I guess anyone who gets that opportunity, I would say, you know, go and do that if you get the invite, for sure. And hopefully, you know, more athletes at the top level get the opportunity to do that and get more live events, Leo.
Yeah, that's why also we wanted with, I discussed with Kaminsky when we went there, and I said, yeah, let's be open with it. Like, just share, just make it public no matter what happened. Like, so people, they can, if they got an invite, they know what to expect and they know that they're going to be treated fairly, and there's nothing to really worry about, because like we said, it's still scary when you got such email. But I know that some people went for testing before but nobody shared anything. I also know that a lot of people has been requested to go there and decline or just disappear. So it was really important for us, as like you say, as OGs, like,
yep,
to show what it is, show the background, the behind the scenes. So it was great.
It's also important to note that there have been people that have failed the test, that we don't know about, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, I eventually was able to get that information, but we wouldn't know that, right? And if they were really trying to make a big deal about it, you know, that's something that we would have heard from them, right? So I almost feel like we're going to have this considered to be a PR stunt for my wish, but I think we all agree that, you know, we feel that, you know, things are headed in the right direction there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I think it's fair to say. I mean, you know, the two athletes that we're with here right now, Chris, is that, you know, they got their start really in cycling esports. I know they did it themselves, but on Zwift. So we all owe a lot to Zwift because we're all working in some way in this space, but, you know, it's they're the only player, and it's a competitive space. Competition is good. We've said this before, and we just want it to move forward. You know, I'm sure, Leo and Ollie, it doesn't matter which platform it is, they just want the sport to grow and progress as you and I do. Lionel, Ollie, really appreciate your time today, your openness with myself and Chris and the rest of the community. I'm sure the community will really appreciate it. And again, you've been really frank with us in terms of your feelings with the platforms, the enormous, the numbers, showing all that data. As I've said before, we wish you the best of luck, both SRC every Sunday as well, first of all. Anyone who actually wants to go and watch SRC, first of all, if you're thinking, well, what's this all about? Full Speed Events broadcast the event every Sunday morning for us. So I guess, is that Saturday or Friday for you, Ollie? Monday. I can't even figure it out. But
during Ramadan at the moment, it's 6 in the morning.
Oh, yeah, that's it. We've got a time change at the moment. Yeah.
Monday morning, but it's usually like 11 p.m. on a Sunday for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So go and check out that broadcast if you want to see what the racing is all about. You can watch these two guys earn some money at the top end and race, and you can see me getting dropped off in Cat 3 at some point. So either way, it's interesting and exciting. So go and check that out.
It's coming, mate. Just trust the process.
I've already said, week in, week out, a best 20-minute power. Yeah. So if I can keep getting these 4% gains that you've been talking about, Lionel, then I may make it to Cat 2 at some point, but hopefully not. just try to get somewhere up there in Cat 3. But
be careful what you wish.
Yeah, exactly. I want to get fitter, but not that fit at the moment. But no, really appreciate today. Just to say as well to the community and the audience, don't forget to like, share, comment. And also, episode 40, it's an exciting show, Chris, because we've got an ex-employee of Zwift who, unfortunately, has been let go in this recent restructuring, let's say, at Zwift. But that also should be an interesting podcast. So that'll be episode 40. That's coming in the next week or two. And we'll see you soon for another Virtual Velo podcast.
Thank you.